and welcome to the Campaign podcast. I'm Lucy Shelley, tech editor at Campaign, and I'm joined in the studio today by media editor Beau Jackson. Hello, Beau.
Hi, Lucy. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's just we're back after a bank holiday weekend. Still getting used to how email works again, but how
back,
are you doing?
Back-ish. I've had to... The train strikes have kept me at home.
Yeah, indeed. Well, let's get cracking. In this news episode, we are going to take you through some of the biggest stories of the week, including Levi's picking UM for their global media account, research into hybrid working, and the release of our market report, The Big Divide, plus the ads that have been getting the attention of Beau and I. So first, let's talk about Levi's. Levi's picked UM as its global media agency, and this is a massive account worth an estimated $142 million, according to Convergent Spend data from last year. Levi's has consolidated its global media account with UM after working with the agency in the Americas for more than 4 years. I should also say this story has come from Campaign US, so this is all their reporting. And the IPG Media Brands Agency was named Levi's Media Agency of Record in the US, Canada and Mexico in September 2019, following a review. But yeah, a massive account there, Beau. There's quite big news from all over the world, wasn't it?
Yeah, so obviously they're going to be kept really busy with this account. Levi's is such a strong brand, and it launched its latest creative campaign, Live in Levi's, an extension of that long-running slogan from the brand earlier this month, I think, or a little earlier this year. And that was made by TBWA, Chiat Day, the American division of TBWA Worldwide, which is part of Omnicom. But it's a great ad and has a really great track on it. Really enjoy the song on that one.
I think Levi's have always done such amazing advertising. And like you said, when you have such a great brand and a great product, great advertising is something that I think they have a lot of fun with, and you have the opportunity to play a lot there. But one thing that is interesting, and one thing that me and Beau were laughing before we started recording, because we talk about this in almost every podcast recently, but they've, again, a big brand, a huge account, and it's gone for a global account. And this is a common trend we're seeing. But Beau, as media editor at Campaign, can you tell us a bit more about what this means?
We've seen a few different things going on in this space. Obviously, it's a specific agency that has got a global account. But in other areas, we're seeing holding companies go for such huge accounts at a group level. Clients want streamlined processes. They want, you know, to have a one-shop-fits-all kind of thing. We're seeing that with Sainsbury's, which is not global, obviously, but it's a huge account in the UK. But what we have been seeing as well is a lot of agencies going for more of a holding company level, which with the likes of Amazon, which is obviously a behemoth. And it makes sense that it would be UM for Levi's, as its global HQ is in New York. And one of the other reasons, I guess, for this kind of trend is that it's cyclical. When I've been speaking to a few people about this kind of trend for how they hold such big accounts, it's that it perhaps goes this way for a little while, and then brands perhaps decide that they want more variety, or that it doesn't work with this kind of setup, or that holding companies no longer want to go for it at a global level, and then it changes again. So it just might be part of this cyclical nature of advertising.
Absolutely. And I think we've asked this question of Adland a couple of times the last couple of weeks in kind of like different angles, but I think people have said it's, you know, trends go up and down, they come and go, and this is definitely a trend that we're seeing everywhere at the moment. And next on the agenda is your hybrid working article, Beau, which showed that 2/3 of Adland staff want to spend 2 days a week or fewer in the office. So, Beau, can you tell us more? What did you discover about this research?
Yeah, so this is some more findings from the All In Census, which was conducted last year. It's a really comprehensive report, and it covers differences in in hybrid working wants, remote working wants and needs from different groups. So it looks at disability, ethnicity and age, among other things. One of the things that did come out of it is that there's a gap between what advertising agencies are mandating from their staff and what they're asking for from their staff and what the employees actually want. But then that varies depending on specific groups and where you're at in your career, things like that. It brought up a lot of questions. So we were sat there thinking, what is the most common number of days in the office actually across Adland? Has it bounced back quite a lot? Because we've seen a few different agencies like Publicis have done it's 3 days a week, I think, mandate. And we've seen 4 days from other places. And is it that when they were more flexible during the pandemic, they've now come back and they're like, no, we need you in, because it's a really hard balance to strike. And then there are disparities in terms of office working when it comes to age and experience. I had somebody actually reach out to me on LinkedIn and ask me, could the data be skewed a little by if there are more people who are at the lower paid end of the industry? You know, are they wanting to be in more because it's about them, you know, not having the space to work at home and things like that, and compared to executives who might be more free with their time and have more space at home. So yeah, a lot of questions to come out of it that I think still warrant exploration.
Yeah, it was a really interesting read, and especially to, like you said, understanding this disconnect and why it might be appearing. And I think the article said the chair of All In, Catherine Jacob, said the analysis shows that Adland's view on hybrid working is still too narrow. The article says that there are different forms of flexibility. It's not just about choosing where we work. So, I mean, what other forms of flexibility can they be talking about here? Is kind of my question that I'm posing to you.
Yeah, I mean, as the working world in general is struggling with this, in terms of how we think of flexibility, because it's such a departure from how we've worked for so long, like the prevalence of the 9-to-5, the, you know, and then shift patterns and shift working and all this kind of stuff. But you can think about, obviously, staggered working and people operating in different hours, so maybe doing a morning and then having an afternoon off if you have some care responsibilities, but then working a bit more in the evening, or, you know, part-time work as well. There needs to be more done in part-time work and how people can do that without, like, putting their careers on hold. It's especially a bit of an issue for women, because obviously a lot of women as primary carers for children take on part-time roles when they come back to work after maternity and things like that. And then sometimes historically it has meant that they then don't progress as quickly because they're part-time and not, you know, seen as not working as much or etc. But there needs to be more things put in place to make sure that that doesn't happen. And I think there is a lot of room for creativity in this space that employers just aren't really tapping into so much. So yeah, different hours, days of the week, things like that, and job sharing actually as well, which Adland could actually be really good. I'm not 100% sure how much we've looked into this before, but when you've got like a creative partnership, you've got a creative duo, you know, how does that work as a job share experience? And is there more potential for that to be applied to different roles rather than just creatives?
And I think it's going to be interesting to see, especially, you know, as you said, this is I think the struggles everyone has is because it's a change of, you know, way people have approached work and how they work and where they work since COVID, obviously, and lockdown. So the long-term effects of this are going to be quite interesting, because I think also, you know, as a young person in the industry, the work-life balance attitude, which is so much more prevalent now than even it was, you know, 10, 20 years ago, and how it might bring more positivity towards people's attitudes towards work because of being able to work from home sometimes. So I think the long-term effects that you might see in a decade or so would be, you know, quite interesting to see what happens there as well.
Absolutely. We just, Like, it's important that they're doing this research, the Ad Association is doing this kind of research, because we don't know. Like, we don't know what the impact of this kind of working is going to be. How is it going to affect people's well-being and sense of belonging? Because that is, it's really important to get the right balance.
Hello, I'm Joseph Arthur, multimedia editor of PMW and host of the Performance Marketing Unlocked podcast. Brought to you by Haymarket Business Media, the Performance Marketing Unlocked podcast dives into all things performance marketing, from CTV and the unending cookie list conundrum to data privacy regulations becoming increasingly stringent and unpacking what on earth you should do with retail media. Any of this pique your interest? It should. And if it does, you need to be tuning in. With new episodes uploaded every fortnight, I'll be diving into the performance marketing news of the week with one of my amazing editorial colleagues and industry experts, covering all things from AI, e-commerce, retail media, measurement, and more. There's something for everyone on the Performance Marketing Unlocked podcast, so make sure you're tuning in. See you there.
Well, finally on the news agenda of the last week, we are going to talk about Campaign's latest market report. As part of the corporate subscription released last week, the Campaign advertising intelligence team have worked incredibly hard on this absolutely ginormous project. When I started reading through it, I was shocked at how large and in detail it was. They have put together an all-you-can-eat buffet on the big six holding companies.
Yeah, it's an incredible piece of work. It focuses on three main areas, so financial performance, M&A activity, and all things new business. The team drill down into how the big six, so Dentsu, Havas, Interpublic, Omnicom, Publicis Group, and WPP performed in 2023, from organic growth to stock valuation.
It is a massive piece of work. I think it's going to be of huge value to anyone that has access to it. But if you don't have access and want access to the report, head to the news story, fill in the form, and the team will help get it added to your subscription, or it can just be purchased as a one-off. But yeah, search for the Big Six on the Campaign website. But before we finish up for this week's news podcast, let's talk about some of the ads that have caught our eyes in the last week. So, Bo, over to you. What's the ad that's caught your eye the most this week?
So, over the bank holiday, I was out and about and went past the IMAX, and Santander had a huge takeover of that. Can we call it a screen? I guess it is a screen, the wraparound of the IMAX cinema, which is really cool. It's promoting its new, its Edge current account, which is new-ish. It's been around for a couple of years, but it just basically says Edge, and then it has Antandeck. And I'm like, what is Edge? What is this? It creates a lot of mystique. But all of the billboards all around that area, as you're like traveling down in the car, on a bus, whatever, I just say Edge, and it's just like a massive like splash that they've done. So it's a tie-in with this ad campaign that was created by House 337 in partnership with Mitre Studios, with media planning and buying by Cara. And the TV ad for it has Jon Snow in it doing a news report, and Antandeck kind of doing pranks on Edge adverts and changing it into different words like wedgie or sausage. good one. So it's fun, and it's like, as a kind of brand awareness, it got me thinking about it. I'm like, I wanted to know what it was. So
yeah, it's one of those ads that makes the viewer, the consumer, ask a lot of questions. But I don't know whether someone like me, maybe I was too tired when I was watching the ad, but I asked too many questions. Like, I was confused why Antandeck were there at all. You already have Jon Snow. And I think advertising has often been criticised for its use of celebrity sometimes, asking, you know, why are you just kind of relying on the reach of celebrity to tell the story? But I think, so the one thing I did quite like about it was, so, you know, it's a Santander ad, and the competitor bank, and we've spoken on this podcast before about, you know, banks calling out competitors and how it hasn't quite worked. But the competitor, the make-believe competitor that was called out, was branded quite similarly to Santander. So it was just talking about the sector as a whole rather than getting specific. Yeah, it's called the Antandek Bank rather than Santander. And that was the only reason I could see that they chose Antandek.
Yeah, well, I mean, but it's fun, isn't it? I mean, they've had Antandek in their ads for some time now, and it's that they are relatable, aren't they, to the general public. They're really well known, and I think they can do fun in a way that is not... That is safe, you know? And I think a lot of banks particularly are using humour, as we've seen with NatWest as well, competitor, using humour to be relatable and to get people talking about finance in a new way. So what had caught your eye this past week?
Oh, so the ad that caught my eye was the Money Supermarket ad. It was by New Commercial Arts. And for anyone that hasn't seen it, I would urge you to go see it. It's a brilliant ad. It's on the campaign website. And there's a secret agent team called Money Super 7, and they're out on their latest mission. And guess who's back? It's Dame Judi Dench. She is again in command, and she takes on a role similar to the role she had in M in James Bond. And they go undercover at the opera. Now, Beau and I were talking about this before we started recording. We love Judi Dench and we love James Bond. So any other style and craft critique that I could warrant or could give towards the ad, I had none because it was about James Bond and Judi Dench was in it. So to me, it was a winner. I loved it.
Yeah. Like as you were saying in the last one, like this is a really good example of a good use of celebrity and tapping into some kind of, I don't think they use the IP, but it taps into her role. You know, it makes you think of that, doesn't it, as a consumer.
It's an interesting conversation, actually, about kind of like the use of IP, because you're right, they didn't have, the fact that she was in command in an undercover operation, they, you know, the audience know exactly what's going on, but there's no reference whatsoever. It's directed by Shakespeare in Love director John Madden, and the ad sees Dench arrive at the opening night of an opera, Carmen, with her operative, and their mission is to deliver savings and rewards to new Super Save Club members. So it's, again, it's one of those things that it's such an over-the-top, ridiculous reason, and when they do find their target, they just literally ask them, have you heard of our new deal? You know, which I also made me laugh. I was like, this is so above and beyond. But the one thing that I thought was quite interesting that you said, which is about tapping into cultural trends. Everyone wants to know what's happening with the next James Bond. Who's it going to be? And I think, well, there are some rumours, aren't there? And it might be hearing later on this year. But it tapping into that nostalgia, obviously, Judi Dench left James Bond a couple of years ago. In that role, but we've been talking elsewhere about the kind of the speed of culture and how to feel nostalgic, referring back to cultural moments that weren't that long ago. You know, it seems kind of bizarre in a way to be nostalgic about something that was, what, 5 years ago? I can't even think. It could have been longer actually now. But it just shows that speed of culture and that, you know, we can tap into things and feel nostalgic about things that didn't really happen that long ago.
Yeah, no, I love a bit of nostalgia. It's always welcome to me. I'm a trawler of all things 90s on social media. So anytime ads tap into that as well, it's really, really works for me, which I think they have been doing. Like the EE one did it a lot with the music in their latest campaign, which was really, that was really like spot on. So, I mean, how effective do you think the Money Supermarket ad is getting its message across?
Well, the fact that Judi Dench was in it just kind of clouded all my mind. I was like, I think it was great because of that moment that I asked when there is no message for a while, apart from the fact that it's Money Super 7, so it's all completely, you know, branded. The 007 brand is Money Super 7 now. And it made me laugh at the moment at the end when they go to all of that effort, you know, doing all the kind of acrobatics that these, you know, undercover operatives do, just to tell them about this deal. The criteria for an effective ad in my book only, just to be clear, is if it's an ad that you then want to go and tell someone else about, then I think it's done its job, you know? Like, if I was like, oh, did you see this ad? It made me laugh. Or, you know, have you seen Judi Dench is back as M? You know, it's brilliant. I think it's effective. Do you think it's effective?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, because it has that element of like, what is the end? What are they after here? What are they doing? And then there's a win, there's a payoff, isn't there? Like, you're led towards it. And then it's like, oh, right, here's your rewards. So if you were a money supermarket customer as well, I think it definitely would resonate. So
Well, it's a bit like that, you know, the short form video trend on social, isn't it? They leave the bit of information you're after right to the very end. This makes people listen all the way through. I believe that is all we have time for today. So thank you so much for coming on and joining me today, Bo.
Thank you, Lucy.
If you'd like to learn more about what we have been discussing today, please visit our website, campaignlive.co.uk. Details of our subscriptions are available at campaignlive.co.uk/membership. If you enjoyed this episode of the Campaign Podcast, please follow us, like us, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast. And a big thank you, as always, to Haymarket podcast producer, Till Owen. And thank you to you for listening. I hope you will join us next time. On behalf of the campaign team, goodbye.